So the excerpt that I want to look at is from the Shastra Abhi translation of Mountains and Water Sutra by Dogen. So I will read. As for the water, it is neither strong nor weak, nor is it wet or dry, nor does it move or stay still, nor is it cold or hot, nor does it exist or not exist, nor is it deluded or awakened. When frozen solid, it is harder than a diamond, so who can smash it? When melted, it is more yielding than diluted milk, so who can tear it to bits? This being so, we cannot doubt the qualities of the various forms of existence that manifest before our very eyes. So stopping here for a moment and considering Dogen's beautiful way of wondering about this substance that is so plentiful on this earth, in some places more than others. Right now, really plentiful here, water. and how it can't be pinned down. It doesn't have its own form. It manifests in different ways at different times, sometimes so hard that it can form glaciers that grind away rock, just as we see here in this bay with these great outcroppings of bedrock that are left behind from glaciers passing through. Even the rock could not stand up to it, ground down. And then on the other hand, so yielding, so that it's a delight to launch a kayak or any boat into it, or just to swim in it, and it parts around us. Floats us effortlessly. How can this be the same thing? And yet we know it is. We know that this is just the property of water. And Dogen suggests that in the same way, all things are of the same substance, even though they appear so very differently, each thing with its own qualities, but yet at base, all one, all the same. He continues, "For now, just concentrate on learning to recognize through your training the moments when you are able to open your eyes and see the water in the whole universe as the whole universe." And learning through training does not refer just to the times when ordinary people or those in loftier positions see the water. There is your learning through training in which the water sees the water. He's really stepping it up here. So it's one thing to recognize to understand with the mind the truth that all things can be one, even though they manifest differently. But how do we actually see this, to know it down to the bones? I notice as I'm walking around that through the woods or wherever, that I'm making a constant reference to myself. I don't actually do this consciously, but it's a habit of mind. And so it's, I'm here, and the tree is over there. I think I'll walk over to it. I'm in this dry place, and if I step out there, it will be a wet place. I hear that bird over there. So there's always this reference to where I am and what I'm doing, as compared to everything else. And it's a useful property to have. It has let us be incredibly successful as a species. But we pay a price. And the price is to forget this other side, that all of these are differing manifestations of the same thing, including I. What is it like to walk about without making a reference to myself? What might that look like? What might that feel like? How might reality manifest in each moment if that's the case? So I notice that that's difficult for me as I walk about. Immediately I go back to my self-reference. And this is okay. I notice that. It's always possible to notice what's going on. The sphere of awareness is always available. In it arise our thoughts of, I am here and it is there. I am this and it is that. And we can just notice that. We don't have to do anything with it. Just noticing it without holding on to it as a solid truth. Holding it lightly as one truth, but not all of it. And that leaves us open to exploration. It's really all that's required. Dogen goes on. And so there is your learning through training in which the water sees the water. Because the water puts the water into practice in order to realize what the water is. Because of this, there will be your thorough investigation of the waters expressing through words what the water is. So there are the Dharma teachings. We offer this to one another as water seeing water, as water manifesting as water. It is our proper manifestation to speak about what we know, what we understand, or what we don't. In this way, you will manifest the pathway upon which we ourselves meet ourselves. Until then, you must go back and forth on that road of life upon which others are all involved with making a study of other, until you leap free. And so, these are beautiful and inspiring words. And how do we make this something other than just an interesting thought experiment? Oh, well, maybe we are all one. Maybe it is possible not to be self-referential for just a little while. But so what? Why make such a great effort to do this? How is this important? So taking a step back for a moment. In doing my homework for this retreat, mountains and waters, well, I'm pretty familiar with water. But mountains, I don't get to quite as much. And so I thought, one of the things I've always wanted to do was to go to the top of Mount Washington. And since I only had a day to do it, I would take the easy route and drive up. Amazing that it's possible to drive to the tallest mountain in New England. And sure enough, it is. So I drove to the base, and they give you... you pay for it, but they offer a CD that you can play as you drive up that describes what you're seeing and some history. And they give you some warnings about how best to drive it because it's a pretty interesting road. Don't know if you've been up or not, but there are no guardrails. It just winds its way at this quite a steep angle all the way up. And we are assured that there is indeed room for two cars no matter where you go on the road. Maybe two little ones. So driving up, I went early, hoping there wouldn't be much traffic, and it was a smart strategy. and drove to the top and parked. And it was a clear day with a spectacular view. And I waited for the inspiration to come. But it was such a gentle day. With all this clarity, no fog, no wind, the sun was shining, it was warm. It's like, I don't see what the big deal is about this mountaintop. It's so easy to be here. So, you know, I rambled about and I ate a little something that I'd brought along and took some pictures. And more people showed up and it began to be almost a party scene. People were hiking up from the valley and people were driving up the road, more insane people coming up that road. So I thought, well, this has all been very nice. I'm glad I did it. Maybe I'll go inside and check out the museum. They give you a token. It's one of the things you get for the money you pay to go up. You get a token to get into the museum. So I went into the museum, which is in a basement. There's not even a view. It's like a downstairs thing. And there are all these exhibits, of course. That's what museums are about. And the first exhibit that I went to was an actual recording of the day that the fastest, the greatest wind speed ever recorded by man occurred on the top of Mount Washington. I believe it was 231 miles an hour. It's incredible. And so they had the diary or the journal of the person who had been making these recordings, and they had him reading from it. It was an audio recording telling moment by moment how this storm built up. And as I listened, and the speeds were, and he had to go out and beat the anemometer to get the ice off of it, and how he had to, you know, like hang on to things because he was being blown, you know, danger of being blown right off of the mountain, and how the chains that held the building down into the bedrock were creaking and groaning, and just a massive storm building up, So he kept taking these readings and taking these readings, and they went up and up, and he couldn't believe that this was really true. And as I listened, I found myself tears coming to my eyes. And I thought, well, this is a curious reaction. What is this emotion about? And I looked around to see if anyone noticed as they started to well out of my eyes. Fortunately, no one was too nearby. And so I just let myself listen more and feel what I felt. So he reached the point where the wind was blowing at this incredible, never-before-known rate, 231 miles an hour. I was just overcome. And it occurred to me that what was welling up in me was this astonishment, this recognition that we don't have control in this world, that we think we know what the rules are and what to expect, but at any time, that can all be literally blown away. And I thought back to a dream that I had had. Diane's already heard this, sorry. I'm going to say it again, because it's stuck with me ever since then. That I had had just a short time before that trip. And it's a short dream, so I won't subject you to too much here. But I had a ball. I was playing ball with a dog. I hadn't actually seen the dog in the dream yet, but I knew that's what I was doing. And the dog was just around a corner. And so I threw the ball to the dog. We had this lovely game going on. The ball went around the corner, bounced off something and went around the corner. And I waited for the dog to bring the ball back. It was a black Labrador retriever. I had that in my mind. I heard this sort of scuffling around and snuffling. And then from around the corner, there appeared a great black rhinoceros. It was snorting and charging directly toward me, with all the chaotic energy of the universe behind it. And I shouted, no, no, no! This was not what I had expected at all. Didn't want it. And I woke myself up with the shouting. And I thought about how often it is that we think we know what lovely game we're playing with nature, right? It's a beautiful thing. And here we are being in sync with it. But we don't know what that power is. We don't get to say. At any time, it can run us right over. This is what we're working with. This is what the person on the top of the mountain that day met face to face with. And this is what we have right here, right now, not knowing what might occur in the very next moment. No control. This surrender to the fact that I am not the important aspect. Water meets water in many different ways. And some of them are not much to our liking. So how do we meet this? How can we be skillful and useful in this world? If we have any self-agenda, we will want I to be safe. We will want I to be okay and to know the rules and to be able to set up the rules and have everything so that we can be protected. And that's not what's on tap. So very important for water to see water, regardless of this I and where it stands, so that water can respond to water as water, can manifest as water, so that Buddha nature can respond to Buddha nature without my agenda in the way. We don't know what that will look like ahead of time. It might surprise us at the very moment that we manifest it. How wonderful to let this incredible energy of the universe come through us as it will. There really is no other way. So this work that we do moment by moment here is incredibly important. We care about this earth, and we don't. Who among us can say that we really know what is the best thing for this earth? And so we do the next thing that comes and the next thing. Let us be water meeting water. Not bringing our own agenda, but seeing what is the next thing that needs to be done when we set I aside. Until then, you must go back and forth on that road of life upon which others are all involved with making a study of other, until you leap free. Thank you.